So yeah, so I founded this movement called The Chat about 9 years ago now at a birthday party when one mom whispered to another mom, our daughters were turning 7, and one whispered to the other mom, "Have you had the chat?" You know, moms always whisper that question. And I realized that no one had a positive spin on this. Everyone was either terrified or indifferent. And I realized how much equipping we as parents needed in this area. And so with a background in journalism and a love for community, a love for family, a love for research and information, it kind of all came together and The Chat was born. And so now I'm talking to all sorts of different topics that parents find hard to talk about. Sometimes those topics are hard to talk about because we don't know how to talk about them. Sometimes we're scared to talk about them, feel overwhelmed, or just feel like we are out of our depth and our children are so far ahead of us. And technology and social media and devices is one of those conversations where, as parents, we feel like sometimes it's a bit of a runaway train. And the horse is bolted and there's nothing I can do about it. But for some of you, you'll just be here tonight because your children are starting to get devices or they have devices, and you just want to make sure that your children are protected and using them well. So whatever way you found yourself here, welcome. This is my family. As you can see, very sunny in Durban. This is my family. We live in a place called Umhlothi, which kind of washed away in the floods last year, but we are on our way back. And that's my daughter Emily in the middle. She's about to be 16, and Blake and Ryan are twins, and they are 13, and that's my husband Brad. And someone gave me some advice many, many years ago, and that person was my mom. And she said this one thing to me. She said, "Teenagers are awesome." And it always stuck with me. She always says, "Teenagers get such a bad rap." You know, and since then, people have said to me, you know, when your kids hit 12, just bunker down. Put your head down because a nice person will pop up at 16. And I kept thinking back to what my mom said and going, no, I don't accept that word over my life. Thank you very much. I don't want to lose 4 years of my children's lives. And I promise you, teenagers are wonderful. One of the biggest struggles of their generation is devices, and so that is something we need to help them with. But they are really great, and I encourage you, don't lose any of these precious years with your children. But they do live in a digital world. You know, we have been obviously very intentional about devices doing what I do, but it is the world they live in, and it's the air they breathe, and it's the language they speak, and they have Google Classroom, and they have all of these different access to these different spaces. And it really dawned on me a little while ago when we were playing 30 Seconds. This is one of the things I love about load shedding, is all the games get pulled out of the cupboard and the briar gets lit or the fire and we get to hang out. And we were playing 30 Seconds and we made the mistake of putting Blake and Ryan on the same team. Those of you who have twins in your family will know you never put the twins together because they always win. They have that telepathy. It's a real thing. And anyway, so it was their turn, and Blake pulled out a card, and he turned to his brother, Ryan, and he said, he looked at the card. You guys all know how 30 seconds works, right? You have these clues, and you have words, and you have to give clues. And he looked at his card, he looked at his brother, and he said, "It's what we like to watch on YouTube." And I was like, I'm pretty sure there are no Mr. Beasts on, or How Ridiculous, or Mark Rober. There's none of that on this 30 seconds game is old. And without missing a beat, Ryan gave his brother the answer. The right answer. Does anyone want to take a guess what was written on the card? Yes, well done, Jeremy. If there was a prize, you'd win it. The answer was shorts. Did someone there get it too? Well done to you guys. Okay, when my son saw the word shorts on a 30 seconds card, he was not thinking of the clothes you wear on your legs for summertime. His brain didn't even go there. When you see the word shorts, that word goes with YouTube. And so I suddenly thought, oh my gosh, the world is changing fast. Language and how we use words is changing really, really fast. And this is the world that they live in. And then another situation happened towards the end of last year when my boys were in grade 7, a little bit more of a less lighthearted situation. So my boys, like in many schools, they had to have iPads for school. We as parents did not want them to have the devices. We didn't believe in devices for primary school age children, but we went to a school, and so if we wanted to stay at the school, they needed the devices, so we gave them to them, and they only had their schoolwork, their Google Classroom, and their textbooks, and we allowed them to have iMessage for their class groups, which were their ways of communication. And so from time to time, oh, and email. And so from time to time, like I'm going to encourage you all tonight to do, is we went onto the device and just checked, you know, some of the messages that were coming through, hopped onto email, and I can't remember if it was email or iMessage, and there was a link that had been sent to both of my boys, because it was on both of their devices, from a girl in their class, saying, please could you complete this form anonymously? Now, this girl was a very, we often talk about the popular kids, but it's actually the powerful kids. There's a big difference between social power and actually being liked. we often talk about the popular, actually, interestingly, and this is very off topic, I was reading an article, they did a survey in an American school, and they said, name the 10 most popular kids in the grade, and then name the 10 kids that are the most liked. They weren't the same. And this girl she had a lot of social power in the grade, and she had sent this out to the boys, and I clicked on it to see what it was about, and it was, she had given the names of 10 girls in the grade and asked the boys to rate them. And she had got creative and come up with categories. So obviously the first one's prettiest, because how else do we judge girls? That's the first one. And then the second one was sportiest. And then the third one was most likely to die single. Yeah. And then the fourth one was would never want my son to date. And so this kind of, I hear these stories all the time, but it was in my son's class with my son's friends. And there are so many things wrong with that situation. And if you speak to a grade 7 who does stuff like this, because honestly, most of the stuff that goes pear-shaped with social media happens in grade 6, 7, and 8. Because they're too young for it and they shouldn't have it. Okay, you guys can all go home now. so she, you know, it was, oh, it's just for fun. We were just joking around. Oh, they will take it in a good spirit. No. It's criminal. It's unethical. It's incredibly harmful to the girl who comes number 10 every time. But because of so many things around social media that we're going to unpack tonight, that is very, very common. We see gossip pages all the time on Instagram. We see anonymous posting pictures where we see people doing the most awful things to one another on social media. That often, because I kind of think, as we unpack this with our sons, we said, well, would that girl take 10 girls and put them up on the stage in assembly and say, boys, can you come up and just arrange these girls? No. But suddenly, an object or a name on a screen, we suddenly treat people completely differently. And this is what we have to understand. Yes, the social media world and the digital world is very much part of our children's lives, but there is a lot of coaching, training, conversations that will need to be had if our children are, number one, going to treat other people well, and number two, are going to guard their hearts and their minds against what is going to come into their lives. So, As we kind of launch off tonight, I want to share a quote with you from Tatiana Jordan, who is the chief CEO of an organization called Bark, who does monitoring and filtering software. And they've actually, interestingly, because suddenly the adults of the world are waking up and going, is it a good idea to give this device to a child? No. And so Bark is one of, and there's many of them coming through now who are actually, they are developing phones that are suitable for children, that don't have browsing capabilities, that don't have the things that open our children's worlds up to all of the harmful aspects of the digital world. So anyway, so she's the CEO of Bark, and she says this. She says, if you don't know what's going on in your child's digital world, chances are you don't know what's going on in your child's world at all. Because so much of what our children do is going to be very fluid between the online world and the offline world. You know, for adults, it's kind of quite a separation. We use it. it, but we kind of quite grounded, well, generally in the real world. But for children, a lot of it is kind of the conversation starts at school, finishes at home online, and then carries on. And then by the time you get back to school the next day, there's a whole bunch of stuff that's happened seamlessly through the digital space. But the thing is, and this is what we need to remember about social media, is that the internet has no shallow end. There's no kiddies pool, you know. Once we give our child a device that has access to the internet, you open a door into the whole world wide web for those children, good and bad. And what is concerning is that often a child is handed a device, and the parents then, that is the end of the interaction, they close that door behind them. And the parents are left outside, not having any idea who those children are having conversations with, who is shaping their neuro pathways, who is shaping their worldviews, who is giving them input on big issues like sex and gender and relationships and God and all of the big things. We are left standing out here, and all of the action is happening somewhere else. And added to that, what we have to remember as parents is that legally, a phone cannot belong to a child until they're 18 years old. So you cannot give your child a phone for Christmas. You're giving yourself a gift that you're going to have to micromanage. That's what you're doing. There's something that I'm sure you all will have heard of called a FICA document. That you cannot sign that until you're 18. So you cannot own a phone until you're 18. So therefore, every single thing that happens on your children's devices is 100% your responsibility, because that device belongs to you. And that goes both ways in saying that children need to give their parents full access to that space, because the buck stops with their parents with that space. And also, parents need to insist on being in that space because it is their responsibility. And so it's not a case of my child won't give me their passwords. If your children won't give you their passwords of your phone, can you see how ridiculous it is? That phone is yours, those passwords are yours, and if your child is showing such immaturity that they cannot journey in a healthy way with you in terms of a phone, they're not ready for a phone. And we've got to wake up to this. We can't be like, my kids won't let me have access. That's like saying, my children are going to bars at night and they just won't come home. You know, my children are letting boys climb through their bedroom window to hang out with them, and they won't. And when I ask the boys to leave, my children tell me to get out of their bedroom and leave them to live their life. That is what we're doing when we're saying my kids won't give me access to their devices. Sorry, I'm getting a little bit excited tonight. I love you guys, and I love teenagers. And they're awesome, and we want to partner with them, and I do love community. And so we've got to just remember that it is ultimately, as parents, our responsibility. And not only legally are we obligated to be involved, but children whose prefrontal cortex, which are responsible for good decision-making, are only fully developed when they are 26 years of age, they desperately need us to be involved. As I heard someone say a little while ago, children can't see round corners. That's why they have parents. You know, they can't see, because of the way children's brains are, the here and now is very important. They're very passionate. They think with their amygdala. And we as parents are responsible for them until all of their corners straighten out and they can see the long-term consequences of stuff. I mean, the other day I was talking at a school in Pretoria, and this grade 7 girl said to me, my mother does not have the right to tell me not to send nudes to my boyfriend. She's 12. It's my phone, it's my body, and it's my choice. Can't see around corners. Need a mom or a grandparent or some kind of responsible adult who will go, my darling, your body is precious and you don't want it on the internet. One day you're going to look for a job and your naked body is going to be on the internet. You know, never mind the fact that you are, this body that you've been given as part of your identity and a whole bunch of stuff that I mustn't get sidetracked in. But it's really, really important that we do that. And so they really need us to establish boundaries and instill values and help them to make good decisions. We, Graham and I had lunch with a tech guy today who does software for families, and I will recommend that later, that, you know, the technical side of devices are set up well for children. But what we also do realize as parents a lot of the time is that our kids will pretty much always be smarter than us when it comes to technology. Unless you're in IT, then maybe you have a fighting chance. But most of us, you know, I had this delightful little boy at one of my talks recently say to me, ma'am, do you know that my granny was addicted to Facebook? So I said, oh, that's cool. I know many grannies who are addicted to Facebook. And he said, but ma'am, you know, she used to always talk to us, play with us, spend time with us. And then she got Facebook, and then she would just sit on the couch scrolling through her phone. And he said, finally, I had enough. So when my granny wasn't looking, I took her phone and I hid her Facebook icon. He said, I didn't delete it. I just put it somewhere I knew she wouldn't find it. And she picked up her phone, and of course, when she couldn't find Facebook, she went straight to her 12-year-old tech expert and said, my boy, help me, someone's stolen my Facebook. And so this little guy said, granny, no one's stolen your Facebook. Take a breath. I have decided that you need a digital detox. I mean, he's a smart boy. And interestingly, research is telling us that a lot of children are going to kick back against technology because they don't want to become the digitally distracted parents that they have. A generation who are getting parented by this part of our head as we're on WhatsApp. You know, who are internalizing whatever's on that phone is more important than me. Never mind, you know, we always have a justification. Yeah, it's for your soccer lifts. Or I'm trying to sort out your play dates. But meanwhile, it's like your friend organizing a girls' night or a very important work email or something like that. But anyway, so this granny decided, okay, she'll do the detox because there's nothing wrong with her. She doesn't need Facebook and she's going to prove it to this little guy. Well, day two, day three, got a little bit hairy. After 2 weeks, they had a little debrief, and this little guy said to his granny, how was it, granny? She goes, it was really hard at the beginning. She said, I missed it so much. I kept picking up my phone and wanting to go on Facebook, and it wasn't there. And then I realized, oh, then I can do something else with my time. And she said this thing to him by the end. She said, you know what I realized, my boy? She said, I realized that instead of spending time with my own grandchildren, I was sitting looking at someone else's. And so he helped her put in screen time so that she only could have 15 minutes on Facebook. And they kind of, you know, the children are parenting us a lot of the time. And they kind of moved on. But the story also illustrates the fact that this is not just a teen problem. This is not just a child problem. This is a cultural war for our attention and our relationships. I recently read that the average baby is starting to learn to talk later than ever before. Can you guess why? It's not because the child's on the phone, it's because the baby's mother is on her phone. So pre-smartphones, I had a Nokia 1510, so I didn't have to struggle with this, is you'd go, oh, my cute darling, come, let's go look at the ducks. Can you count the ducks? 1, 2, 3. Oh, you're so clever. Come, let's go for a walk. Look at that. And you would constantly be babbling at your baby. But the digital mom is either so grateful for a break that she's like scrolling through her TikTok while the baby's quiet for a few minutes, or she's going, taking a photo and going hashtag baby in the park for the baby's Instagram page. Because I have friends who are parenting now, they have Instagram pages for their babies. I actually have this one, it's called The Little Life of Livy. It's my one friend's, like, who literally, I mean, I think it's going to be quite cute when she's like 25 and she can look back at her life, but it's just indicating that this is a problem for all of us. And it's important for us to remember that that it is impacting All of us. So this is just a statistic to illustrate that, is 75% of us as adults can reach our phones 24/7. So that means they are in reach when we're sleeping, they are in reach when we're on the toilet. This guy that we were talking to today, he said, you have to have boundaries in your home, like no phones at the table, no phones in the toilet. I was like, yes. And all of you are going, no, please don't do that. But most of us are in the same boat as our children. And then this is just a statistic that I find so concerning out of many of the statistics I see, is that the average teenager spends 6 to 9 hours a day on their phone, and often they're double screening. They're gaming while they're messaging friends, or they're watching Netflix while they're snapping, and then they're spending all of this time online, and they're spending about 45 minutes a day with their families. So when we think about screen time, it's important to think of a couple things. How much time we're spending on our screens is important. And then the other thing is, what are we taking that time from? Because we only have a certain amount of time. So if you're taking 6 to 9 hours for that, that time is coming from other places, i.e. family. And if we look at this and we think in sheer, if we only look at time, you think, well, where is the who are the main influences in our teenagers' lives? Well, if you're spending 6 to 9 hours listening to Andrew Tate and 45 minutes listening to your father, you're going to grow up to be a misogynistic person who doesn't believe that depression exists, you know? But, so it's important for us to remember that it's the content that our children are watching, and we're watching, obviously, the time, and then also what that time is stealing from. The American Association of Pediatrics, who is kind of the benchmark around tech time, they are still saying 2 hours a day is how much time the maximum amount of time we should be spending on our screens, which I think is a little unrealistic if you think work, recreation, all of those different things. But I think the reality is we realize that all of us are probably spending too much time. But obviously it has an impact on everyone, but it has even more of an impact on young people whose brains are still developing, who are still developing their worldviews, and they are so susceptible to external input. And a couple other things just to remember about the digital space is that it is a very public space. There is no kind of filter on the content that is out there. There are content moderators, but they don't do a very good job. And often for children, they are getting exposed to highly sexualized content. TikTok, full of sex. YouTube, full of sex. Every single app, highly politicized content. There's a lot of racism. There's a lot of it's a highly politicized, a lot of the issues that we look at, even things like gender and big issues like that, they're highly politicized actually as well. And they are very marginalizing spaces. So the social media space does, and the tech space, is it tribalizes us. You belong to a camp. And with algorithms, you get fed more of what you watch. So I've heard it explained so well, is that social media is a narcissistic echo chamber. It basically tells you that you're clever and they're stupid. And it feeds you more stuff to tell you how right you are, and then how wrong everyone else is. So for example, if your child is having a day where, and every single teenager does this, is where they feel uncomfortable in their own body, and they go and they search body dysphoria on, well, maybe they don't know that word, they just go, why am I uncomfortable in my own body? It's very, very easy for them to come across the vast array of transgender content on TikTok, which will then and then they'll go, oh, well, this is how I'm feeling, so this must be what I'm going through. And because they have just hovered over those posts, they don't even have to search stuff, they'll be fed more of the same. Then they'll be invited to a Discord server for transgender teens, and then they'll be able to follow the joyous journeys of girls who've had double mastectomies when they're 14, and suddenly we have our children being raised by other children who have an agenda for their lives. So it is a very complicated space, and it's not a neutral space. It's a space that is there to addict us and to influence us. So before we carry on, I just want to just clarify what social media is, because a lot of parents come to me and say, my child has a phone, has a whatever, but doesn't have social media. So let's look at, let's just have a quick squiz. What is that? Twitter, okay. Most of you kids won't have that. Maybe one or two of you and Donald Trump, but those are the only people I know who use Twitter. Instagram. Where are the young people? This is called Twitch. You need to speak up. You know a lot. Thank you. All the mommies are like, I know this one. Discord. Be Real was cool for like 5 seconds. Not so much anymore. These are all social media. And there's tons more. Do people still use Facebook? Yes, no, no wait. Okay, so any way that your child or you can connect to another person online is called social media and has potential pitfalls. So what are some of the pitfalls of that? What are some of the harms that can happen to our children? Well, one of the things that a lot of sociologists are concerned about is the emotional impact of devices on our children. It is well documented that this is the loneliest, most depressed, and most anxious generation of all time. And a lot of that blame is being put at the door of social media. There's a lot of reasons for this. Frances Jensen from the University of Pennsylvania puts it so well. She says, social media is the gasoline that turns the flicker of adolescent angst into a blaze. So social media takes the normal, awkward, hard, confusing, weird stage of being a tween and a teen and goes, phew. Because suddenly you're not going through it with your family and your small community, you're going through it with the whole world. With a whole bunch of input telling you a whole bunch of stuff, not only about what is right, but also about how you are and how you should be feeling, and then putting a whole bunch of pressure on you as well. That pressure takes different forms. A child who sits alone in their bedroom scrolling aimlessly through social media, disconnected from their family, is much more likely to feel isolated and anxious and depressed for many, many different reasons. The social pressure that exists online to have the most likes, to not be blue-ticked, to keep up your snap streaks, you know, all of these things that just put so much pressure on our children. Also, the fact that when children are going through stuff and their parents kind of want to put on the brakes or bring some kind of, I just want to say to them, kind of let's process this together. I don't necessarily agree with what you're saying and what you're feeling. Those children can easily find people online who will agree with them and say that their parents are archaic haters that they don't need. And we see children finding and seeking out like-minded people who will reinforce a lot of negative behavior, stuff like self-harm, eating disorders, body shame, and those kinds of things. And then obviously also the constant connection that our children have when they have devices, where you go from school where there's a bully, and that bully doesn't stay at school. They follow you into your bedroom on your phone, and they bring a whole bunch of other people with them, so you never get a break from the pressures and the stresses that come from school life. The dopamine rush that we get from social media that the app developers use to connect us and get us hooked in is really bad for the brains of young people. It wires our brains in ways that make them less attentive, less emotionally stable. I'm sure most parents have experienced the crash that comes after your child has been gaming for a long period of time. That's called your brain trying to regulate dopamine levels. And so, you know, you can ask most teachers and they will tell you who the children are in their classes who spend too much time gaming or on social media, because they're less attentive, they're less motivated, they're emotionally unstable, and they often are quite almost entitled and egotistical, children who spend lots of time on social media because they've been told that what they believe is right and everyone else is dumb for not agreeing with them. And so there's a lot of stuff that can happen kind of in their emotional and mental health. And the last one, just before I carry on, is their sleep. Children who have their devices in their bedrooms when they are sleeping and after parents go to sleep are going to sleep way worse and way less than children whose devices get taken away an hour before bedtime. They did a study of 1,000 12-year-olds and asked them, do you keep your phone in your bedroom? 85% of them said yes. And of those, 30% of them woke up in the night to use that device. And I know lots of teenagers who, the ones who have their phones in their bedrooms, when they can't sleep at night, they pick up that phone, you know, to get back to sleep. And I say to them, well, you may as well go to the fridge and have a Red Bull to put yourself back to sleep because it's going to have the same effect on your brain. And it can get to the stage, I know many teenagers who can't fall asleep unless they're scrolling through TikTok. Some of you may know Michael McIntyre. He did such a hilarious thing about this during COVID, and he talked about how he used to scroll through, and his son's bedroom was upstairs, and their bedroom was downstairs, and at a certain time at night, they would hear kunk, and he would look at his wife, and he'd go, oh, our little boy's asleep, because his phone had fallen onto the floor. And this is a reality of so many teenagers is they fall asleep watching this stuff. And I actually spoke to a 12-year-old girl recently who said she can't sleep unless TikTok is on autoplay in her bedroom. That's how bad it has got to her because she's programmed her brain. And obviously poor sleep leads to poor brain function, bad concentration, depression, anxiety, compromised thinking, weight gain, low immune systems, and so there's a knock-on effect of us allowing this to happen. And then obviously it is having a huge impact on their relationships. Devices both connect us and enrich our relationships and then also make them a whole lot more complicated. A lot of teenagers are not the same people online and offline. They're very different at school to how they're behaving online. Girls often use devices to exclude one another. They'll create a new WhatsApp group and not tell that girl about it. And she's going, where's everyone gone? And no, that's done. We've moved on over here. Or intentionally create a WhatsApp group to just bully a girl. There was a case at a school recently where these girls in grade 7 created a group and fake befriended another girl and systematically incited her to suicide. They literally told her how she could do it, why she should do it, and that's quite an extreme example, but we see this kind of behavior all the time. You know, Instagram is full of anonymous gossip pages, Spill the Tea Cape Town, or literally a school's name, you know, Gossip Durbanville, and you have these children name dropping, so-and-so is a so-and-so is whatever, you know, and we see this all the time. Boys can be mean online, they often create fake accounts, they prank one another. We had some grade 7 boys in Durban create a whole fake Instagram account about a teacher they didn't like, stole pictures from her Instagram and her husband's Facebook, and created all these awful memes. Obviously, online dating complicates things, and we're seeing this first generation of people who've kind of been in the space of having the option to flirt online and date people online and have girlfriends and boyfriends online are coming into adulthood, and the results are really scary. There was an article I read recently that said, why are so many young men single and sexless, i.e. the levels of sexual activity and relationships are at an all-time low because this generation is growing up knowing how to flirt on Snapchat, but no idea how to flirt with someone face-to-face. Never mind ask them out, break up with them, have an awkward conversation. I spend a lot of time with teenage boys, and I literally teach them how to talk to girls. Like, what are some of the things you can talk about? What are some of the questions you can ask? And then we got this generation of men settling for online relationships over face-to-face relationships because it's just easier. But honestly, if you're in an online relationship here tonight, I just want to say that it's not real. You're dating a made-up person. And when we allow our children to swap out real relationships for online ones, we rob them of the depth and beauty of human relationships, and they swapping them out for fake and shallow ones. Obviously, devices are having a huge impact on the social skills of our children. We already just spoke about children learning to talk. Children are starting preschool not able to be creative because they are just absorbing Cocomelon and Peppa Pig for hours. So they understand language, but they can't create anything. They can't tell a story. They can't describe a picture. And then because every time they go out to a restaurant, their parents give them an iPad and a bouncy cover, they don't know how to make conversation. They don't know how to wait. They don't know how to sit and wait. They don't know how to regulate their emotions, because when they throw their tantrum and checkers, parents give them a phone to calm them down. So they don't know how to process their emotions in a healthy way. And often teenagers now, when they go out in public, they're wearing their earphones. You know, they're cutting themselves off from the people around them. For me, earphones, stuff, that's for when you're on your own. But a lot of teenagers, because they're getting so used to having their earphones in and listening to music or doing whatever, and they're used to that barrier that it creates with other people, they carry on wearing them even when they're not listening to anything. Because teenagers have literally said this to me: I wear it so that people don't talk to me. Because, ma'am, that's so awkward. A stranger, haven't even seen their Instagram profile, and now they want to have a conversation with me. I have no grid for this person. You know, they might steal me. You know, all these kids today, they're like, someone's going to steal me. No one's going to steal you, probably. Someone might catfish you, but you probably say physically, like, no one's really going to steal you. And this is the irony, right, is that parents, I read the story of this 15-year-old boy, and he's saying, my parents don't feel like it's safe to go out, so in the holidays, they leave me home by myself with my PlayStation and my iPhone. I'm saying to those parents, please just let him go play soccer in the street. He is way safer than in your house on his iPhone. You know, as parents, we've got this kind of idea about what is dangerous and what's not, and sometimes it's a little bit the wrong way around. We're not going to talk about this next one very much because we spoke a lot about it this morning, but I know a lot of you weren't here this morning, so I just want to say that the digital space is having a huge impact on the sexual health of this generation. In fact, pornography is the battle of this generation. It is the battle they are going to fight for their relational and their relational freedom, their sexual health, and the first generation of boys who grew up, and it's girls as well, so I don't want to exclude them, the first generation that have grown up with porn in their pockets, i.e. on an iPhone, is now aging into the 20-something years, and we are seeing a huge, devastating impact of pornography on this generation. One of the big problems is that it's become so acceptable. Actually, Pornhub came up with the phrase sex positive. I'm sure you've heard that phrase. But they literally used that as part of their marketing campaign to make people think that this is freedom. This is going to save your marriage. This is just what boys do. It's a stress release. It's normal. And so there is so much of this content online. In fact, the average age of South African child sees porn for the first time is 10. I did an impromptu survey at the boys' school where I do some work, and about 5% of 14-year-olds say they think they're addicted from the survey I did. And that was kind of it's quite a wealthy area, but a government school, so a very mixed demographic. But only about 15% of those boys said they'd never seen it. So by 14, pretty much everyone has seen it, and a lot of people are using it regularly, and it is shaping and forming what our children are thinking about relationships. And some of the impact it's having is because a lot of what they are seeing is immoral, criminal, unethical, and dangerous, it's shaping what they think sex is. And it's shaping what they want to do to people. And so it's shaping their relationships. We're seeing a huge impact on consent, i.e. consent is optional. And when a girl says yes, she's saying maybe. Let's just see how far you can push my boundaries. We're seeing an increase in teen-on-teen sexual violence. We're seeing an increase in domestic abuse and gender-based violence. We're seeing an increase in divorce. In America right now, half of all divorces are caused by porn consumption or porn use. But at the same time, our culture is saying this thing is so cool and so evolved and so liberated. So this is something that is having a huge impact, and not only on mainstream porn sites, but it's on Netflix. It's all over TikTok. It's on Spotify. It's on YouTube. It's pretty much all of those spaces. Your child can access porn through those spaces, and there is tons of sexual content on them. The other thing, and we're almost done with all of the impacts, so we can take a little break, is the impact on our children's reputation and future. As I said, children often don't care about the implications of the online content that is out there about them. I mean, I've heard girls say, I don't mind if there's a nude out there of me as long as it's a good one. She will care one day. She will care one day. She might not care right now because she thinks she's being body positive and all of those things that our culture is telling her to be, but her digital footprint is forever. And that applies not only to sexual content, but to conversations we have, things we say, things we do. You know, any kind of digital content is dangerous content. You know, the one of the perks of working with teenagers is they teach you skills. And one of the skills I now have is I know how to screenshot on Snapchat without the person knowing that I've screenshot. And if I can do it, anyone can do it. But I'm not telling you how. You have to figure it out for yourself. But anyway, so there is tons of reasons why we can't put, if you don't want it on a billboard, it shouldn't be on any kind of digital platform. And just to run through this quickly is that there are legal implications for our children in terms of what they put online. A child can be found criminally culpable from the age of 12. From 12 to 14, it's on a case-by-case basis, but over the age of 14, children have full criminal capacity. So that means if they do something, i.e. they have a nude of a child who's under the age of 18 on their phone, they can be criminally prosecuted for that. And there's also other things like defamation, grooming, cheating on tests, that kind of things that children can be prosecuted for. And what's also quite surprising when I found this out is our children have civil capacity from the age of 7. So they can be taken to civil court from the age of 7. And some of those things will be defamation of character, harassment, cyberbullying, damage to reputation, for just to name a few, that your child can be taken to court. But obviously your child is responsible for creating the content, but who's responsible for the phone? You. Who's going to pay the legal bills? You. There was an interesting case a little while ago at a school in Pretoria where one boy woke up in the morning on a Sunday, was a little bit bored, so he downloaded a picture of two naked men off the internet, and he got the face of his principal and put it on the one, and the face of his deputy principal from his school and put it on the other one, and then took the school logo and covered the private parts. Okay, and then he sent it to one friend, that constitutes publication, right? You send it to one person, you have published it. Whether you put it on the front of the Sunday Times or you send it to one friend on WhatsApp, it's still publication. And then he sees that friend at church that morning and says to him, yes, these are church children. Don't look so shocked. You know, you're always like, no, it's those other kids, right? And you say to your children, I told you not to hang out with those kids. Anyway. Saw his friend and goes, please don't share that. It was just a bit of fun and I was just joking. And this friend goes, I just sent it to one person. Well, obviously, by the time they get to school on Monday morning, it's gone viral because it's so hilarious. And boys love anything with a bit of, like, this kind of risky nudity in it. And then one boy had got super creative and printed a whole bunch and stuck them on the notice boards. So what started out as a bit of fun on a Sunday morning escalated quite quickly. So they got called into the principal's office. The principal took it in the spirit that it was intended. The deputy principal did not. The boys got taken to court. Their parents had to pay a huge amount of legal bills. They were found guilty. The parents appealed. They were found guilty again. And they were sentenced to 200 hours of community service at the Pretoria Zoo. So there are implications for what we do. Yeah, I think they were shoveling poo for 200 hours. Hopefully they will teach them a lesson. And obviously there is also what we call catfishing and sextortion, where Emma Stadler, who's a social media lawyer, said she deals with about six of these a day, where our children are befriended by people who are not who they say they are, and those relationships escalate because these people are clever. They're sexually grooming your child until they get a nude from your child and then extort them for money or more images or whatever. There's a lot of this online. And what they put out there is a big deal. I don't know if any of you remember last year, Bianca Squimby, who was our Miss South Africa, she got pulled from the Miss Universe pageant because of something she did on social media when she was 12. So it's important that our kids know that what they put on the internet has long-term implications for them. Racism, homophobia, memes, comments, all of these things. My daughter's a surfer, and she's very passionate about surfing. It's like what she wants to do with her life. And a little while ago, some of you may know Bethany Hamilton. She's an incredible surfer. And Bethany, the WSL made a ruling around that transgender women can enter as women on the WSL surfing circuits. Well, my daughter was furious, because my daughter's also big about justice and fairness, because she says, how can I surf against a biological man? That's not fair. They're so much stronger. And so Bethany Hamilton posted something, and then Emily commented on it. And it wasn't bad what she said. She just kind of was like, this is not fair. These are not women. These are men, and they can't compete as women. And I actually made her take it down because that could impact her career, actually. And so our children, even though she is standing up for something that she feels very strongly about, we have to be so careful about what we put into the world. Then there's also, just as we come into land for this first session, is our children have to remember that not only what they put out there has implications for their future, but also what they choose to be part of. And it's important that they know that with chain of publication, if you have an opportunity to stop something and you don't, you become part of that chain of publication. So there was that grade 7 WhatsApp group with those girls who were bullying that other little girl and encouraging her to kill herself. There was a girl on that group who said and did nothing. She's also in court because she had the opportunity to put a stop to it and did nothing. So our children need to know that if they're on a WhatsApp group where things are happening and they say nothing, do nothing, and don't leave, they are putting themselves in a very, very dangerous situation. And also, for example, if there is a gossip page and there's something defamatory said and your child likes that thing, they are now part of that. And so there are so many legal implications for our children that they need to know about. And as I said, our children are still being, they're still growing, their brains are being shaped and formed, and there's so much stuff that can go wrong, both what comes in and what goes out, that it's super important that we as parents take a very active role in raising them to be healthy, safe, and wise digital users. And so we're going to take a break now, and then when we come back, we're going to talk about how we can do that. And I love the fact that there are young people in the audience, because there has to be buy-in from all of us. You know, parents can do everything they want, but it's going to be up to our young people to say, no, I have a future. There's stuff that I want for my life, so what am I going to do with my parents as I journey forward? But before we go to the break, I just want to thank Focus on the Family again for the amazing work that they do. I mean, I've watched that presentation quite a few times because we do some work together, and every time I watch it, I think, how do they do all this stuff? How do they make all of this stuff free in a world where you pay for everything? How do they make it free? And I know that a lot of that comes through partnerships. And so I just want to encourage you that if you think that this stuff is something that you want to support, there's a card that you'll find on the desk that is a little partnership card. And this is a card where you say, okay, I want to give $100 a month to Focus because they're doing great work. And I want to help families who are battling with suicide, or I want to help families. So if you want to do that, you fill out this little card. And you sign it. That's the only really important thing, is get hold of your phone number, and there's some bank details for you to fill in if you can. And if you choose to do that, you get this beautiful resource pack that I've looked at it a few times, and it is absolutely beautiful. So you're going to get a gift voucher for a digital version of this, which is called Launch Into the Teen Years, Navigate Adolescent Together with Biblical Truth and Courage. So beautiful and so much content. You'll get that. And then there are all these beautiful books. Some of you may know Mandy Hart. She's incredible. She's spoken at a lot of Focus on the Family events. This is called Parenting World Changers. I don't know about you, but I want my child to be a world changer. So that is an amazing book. And then this one is one that is one of my on my bookshelf books that I love. I have it at home and I refer to it a lot. It's called Left to Their Own Devices. It's a lot about what I spoke about tonight, but it's a beautiful reference book to just keep at home. This one has been updated post-COVID, which is incredible. And then this is just a beautiful little book from Catherine Hill. If you forget everything else, remember this. A really beautiful little book. And then these last three are books from me, well, from my organization. This one I didn't write, but I imported from New Zealand because I love it so much. If you have little kids, this is the cutest book. It's called Keeping Safe on the Web with Carl the Kingfish. And they equate the ocean to the web. And so it's so clever. They talk about the predators that are out there and the beautiful things you can discover and where is safe and where is not safe and why you need lifeguards, i.e. you guys. And those kinds of things. And then we're going to talk about this just now, but if your child has any access to the internet, or if they're over the age of 7, please talk to them about sex. You know, I actually read something the other day that experts are now saying 5 or 6 years old is when you want to do it because of the access to so much sexual content. But if you're scared, here's a book to help you, okay? You literally, this is what you're going to do. You're going to go home, not tonight, you don't want to wake them up, tomorrow night. And you're going to lie down on the bed next to your child and go, I bought a new bedtime story. And you're going to lie there next to them in the dark with a little light on so they can't see your blush creep up your cheeks. And you're going to read to them about God. And this is a book for anyone. It's from a Christian point of view, but it is about sex and how babies are made. And I wrote this book for a couple of different reasons. The one is I wanted a book that any family could read to their child. I didn't only want the picket fence story. I wanted a family that a teen mom could read to her child, or a granny could read to her grandchild. So that's this book. One of my greatest compliments about this book is a mom messaged me and she said, after I read that book, I feel like I can talk about anything. And that's the goal of the chat always. And then this last little book is called Hashtag Well Connected. And obviously that's the title of tonight. And I wrote this book for senior primary age children. It's written as a chapter book. And it's got all of the stuff we have spoken about tonight in their language. And then it's got strategies and tips and ways that they can keep themselves safe, wise, and kind. And then it's also got conversation cards you can cut up, because that's we don't do it as much. I actually need to do it with my teenagers more. But it was one of my favorite things when my kids were small, was you have a jar of conversation cards at the dinner table. You know, if you want to start conversation and have big conversations, you just cut up little cards. I mean, there's a gazillion of them on the internet. But this is specifically about the digital world. And then there's also some tips in there. So if you're keen to partner with Focus, fill in one of those, get all these amazing resources. And if you're already partner and you want to up your contribution a little bit, you'll also get all of that. But otherwise, there are amazing resources on that table. And Graham, we will be back at